It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch.
4 o'clock hours here, every day at 4. We react to what was said on First Take and give our Vegas take. Ryan McKinnell, Adam Hill down at the Golden Nugget, set up right there across from the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen, just down the way from the Chick-fil-A. New stuff going on all the time at the Golden Nugget, as I know they have another restaurant concept on the way. All right, well, we like talking Kevin Durant. I was going to say I like discussing him more when he plays, but actually I think you guys like discussing him more when he's not playing, and yes. He's going crazy on social media. We'll get to his little media fight, because we actually know the dude pretty well, who was battling yesterday about going to the Nets over the Knicks, but for some reason last night. You want to explain this, guys? One of you. He decided to start going back and forth with Kendrick Perkins, which I find really interesting, because I got to tell you, I don't care how big you are, there's no one on the face of the earth who'd want to meet face-to-face at some point with KP. Right? He's a big, mean dude, and he's actually done a pretty good job in his initial foray into the media, because he speaks pretty honestly, and he'll go at current and former players. So what started this whole thing before we hear from Stephen A.?
Russell Westbrook was back in Oklahoma City playing for Houston, and Kendrick Perkins decided to go to Twitter to proclaim Russ Westbrook the greatest player to ever wear a Thunder jersey. And that certainly offended Mr. Durant, who is the greatest player to ever wear a Thunder jersey.
But is triggered all the time.
Sure.
He says he accuses other people of, living in someone else's head, or someone else living in their head. You're too sensitive. And he gets triggered all the freaking time. So as this went along, how nasty did it get?
It was pretty good. I mean, listen, if people can say what they want about Kevin Durant, he's really good at Twitter.
Yes. I like how Steve asked how nasty it got, and you're like, it was really good.
It was good. It was great.
It's not the word he used, but
because
I love it.
Durant obviously, stated his claim as being the greatest player, and then they kind of went back and forth, and Kendrick Perkins pulled out the, you lost in a series after he left when you didn't have him around, and Durant went with the, yeah, and our starting center averaged a whopping 2 points and 3 rebounds during that series. Ooh. You played hard, though, champ, which Ooh. Is so demeaning and so amazing.
It's like a pat on the head, right?
Oh, it's great. And then Kendrick Perkins, of course, played the weakest move of all time, was, going to join a team that beat you after you led 3-1 in the series. And Durant responded with, "Weak is starting at center, playing real minutes with no production. Should have worked on your skills as much as I did, which is also tremendous. Although it is kind of ignoring the fact that Kevin Durant is naturally incredibly gifted.
It's also ignoring the fact that Kendrick Perkins is a certain type of player, and
right.
He's not supposed to be some skilled center. He's to go out there, play defense, intimidate, and knock people around.
Right,
and by the way, Kevin Durant doesn't want to do that, does he? So it's nice having Kendrick Perkins on your team to do that and protect you.
Sure, but Steve, it's 280 characters.
I know. That was
you got to be better at Twitter, like Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Just got to hit him with the champ. Okay, champ.
First Take addressed this morning, and it's interesting with Stephen A. because he's had it out in the past with Kevin Durant. So I want to see if he takes a side and what his angle on this is.
And here's where Kevin Durant looks bad. It's on the night that everything was happening for Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City.
That's a great point.
That's
great
the
point.
Problem. If it were any other day, if you had had this argument a month ago, it wouldn't have been good.
But that's
if you had
it
over summer, it wouldn't have been good. But
up,
that
would have
been light.
Right?
The fact that this happened on the day.
Okay. What? On the day that Westbrook was playing. So what do you think of that? Is that the worst part of this? Or is – well, you obviously don't think Durant ripping Perkins to shred is a bad thing.
Well, my whole thing is the whole conversation started because it was Russell Westbrook's return to Oklahoma City, and Kendrick Perkins was just talking on it. He was going on SportsCenter, and he was just essentially doing a segment. I don't know where Stephen A.'s outrage comes from. Like,
yeah,
he was hijacking his moment or something.
Well, it's almost insinuating that Durant just chose to go on Twitter
right.
and start saying, "I'm the greatest player that ever." No, he was responding because somebody put out the tweet that that, hey, he's the best Thunder player to ever wear the jersey, which Kendrick Perkins was doing for, you know, entertainment value. Certainly he teased it on Twitter and said, hey, I'm going to go on TV and say this. Durant responded. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense why it happened right now. And I it's topics come up for discussion when they're relevant. It makes sense. And last night it was relevant.
Yeah, KD, we would all agree, is arguably one of the most sensitive snowflakes in the history of sports, not just basketball. I mean, the burner account, this constantly chiming in. But he didn't hijack this moment. He, in fairness to KD, he was just responding.
Bottom line is, you are Kevin Durant. You are the narrative. You are the headline. And the fact that you made the statement that you made on the day that Russell Westbrook is being celebrated in Oklahoma City makes you look bad.
It doesn't. It would have made him look bad if he was bad.
Out of the
Twitter.
Blue. Or out of the blue was just right. Making a comment like, I'm the greatest Oklahoma City Thunder. Congrats to Russ for coming home tonight, but don't fool yourself. That would be a blank move.
Or if you had like some trash takes or like you weren't funny.
Yeah.
He was funny and awesome. Like, that's good. As long as you're good at it, it's good.
Well, Stephen A. wants to reiterate and pound it home why he thinks KD looked really bad. Oh, my bad. I thought we had a third. My bad. All right, so I think the bigger deal this week was Kevin Durant battling the New York media member. Or is that a is that a media? Am I not objective because I'm in the media?
Wait, is that why? Is that why you're not objective?
Well, actually, here's the story. So Brandon Tierney, who does CBS National, went at Kevin Durant, and we'll read the tweets and the whole exchange. The reason I ask about my objectivity is if I'm... Well, first of all, I'll say I don't back the media guy. I actually agree with Kevin Durant, because the rub on this was that Brandon Tierney, like so many New Yorkers, media and fans, hold Madison Square Garden and the Knicks up as some ultimate destination, and it hasn't been an ultimate destination for 20 years.
Yeah.
He's wrong on that, and we keep hearing this nonsense with the Mecca. On that show, Molly Karam kept screaming the Mecca about 2 months ago, and Max Kellerman, who's a New Yorker, was like, basically, F the Mecca. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So I have Durant's back on this, and again, I'll get you the text here after the break, but my bigger concern for Durant, and Adam, you can remember what I said about Durant in picking a destination, that I don't believe he's a New York guy.
No.
When it comes to the media and now with social media, what this sets up by battling New York media people, dude, when you go to the Nets and they don't win titles and potentially you're underwhelming and the team is underwhelming, you can't do this. So, like, right now, while you're not playing and there's no expectation for the Nets, I guess it's acceptable and we can just judge it as, like, hey, this is just a philosophical difference of who is the most important team in New York. But when you start to lose, you're dead meat if you want to start – if he chooses to start battling multiple media people. Like, he used to look miserable around the Warriors media.
Yeah.
He has no idea what's coming.
Yeah.
These guys take pride in torturing athletes or coaches. I mean, Adam Gase, I thought, did a pretty good job in the second half of the season. The beginning of the season, they tortured the guy over his eyes, his weird demeanor, and then on top of that, he was losing. Like, what do you do if you're Gase? Then you're screwed, and then he turned around and he was a jerk. So, frankly, after the Jets season, most of the media are like, it was a total failure. The Jets season was not a total failure with Sam Darnold around, yeah. But the media doesn't care at that point.
No,
like, there's no way to make up for it. Like, Gase has to make the playoffs and freaking win playoff games to turn around the narrative. He's now set up to be screwed.
Yeah, and listen, we've known Brandon a long time, and I don't think he's going to back down from
this. No, he's not.
Well, here's the thing.
Because he's a voice of the fans, and he's a voice of the Knicks fans, and Knicks fans are always going to embrace this stupid thing, like, you got to come play for us, or you're a pansy. Like, no, your owner sucks.
Yeah, well, Steve, maybe for the first time the New York media has met their match. Someone who is as petty as they are, who is as motivated as they are to hate, hate, hate at all hours of the day, whether it be 2 o'clock in the morning. Kevin Durant lives on social media. He's constantly defending himself. And when you throw heat at him, he throws it back 10 times better, pats you on the head, and calls you champ.
Steve, he's not Gase. You've never worked or lived in the New York market, so you have no idea how bad it can get.
I mean, I live in America, and I've followed New York sports my entire life,
and they're the
equivalent of a flyover state in the sense that over the last 20 years, in terms of irrelevancy, whether it be basketball, whether it be hockey, whether it be football, whether it be baseball, they haven't won a whole lot. But yet the ego of New York, it's so different. The media is so different. The atmosphere is so different. It's impossible to play in New York. It is different. But the landscape is changing. Okay, I have no idea. All right.
You don't.
All right.
You don't.
Just because I haven't lived in New York and I haven't been a media member in New York does not mean that New York is not a part of my blood as an American and as an American sports fan.
There's so much local attention.
Sure.
All the time.
Who is more equipped to deal with that than Durant? He's constantly defending himself, constantly worried about his image, constantly throwing heat.
Can't do it against like 300.
Seems like he can.
When there's like 8 beat writers in Golden State, he was miserable after. He would be like, oh, God, I got to deal with these guys. Now you're going to have like 150 every day trying to get their content, trying to get their interviews every single day. And every single station, there's 30 sports stations instead of 2. Or one, or whatever is in San Francisco. It's every day with every single guy. You can't.
It's the Nets, Adam. It's not the Mecca.
You don't have enough time in the day.
Let's get to that angle because we do have to deal with the back and forth with Kevin Durant and this whole Knicks thing because Durant is right on the Knicks.
Make sure to tune in each day at 10 a.m. to ESPN News or the ESPN Radio app for First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz. Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
Talking some NBA, actually off the court as much as on the court. Off the court news in from Woj. Lakers extending the contract of GM Rob Pelinka. He's done an awesome job. Put this team together single-handedly. Got LeBron James to come there. Great job, Rob Pelinka. He's also promoted to VP of Basketball Operations. So on the whole, KD on Twitter, on social media, going nuts on Kendrick Perkins, and then also earlier in the week battling a New York-based media guy who does national radio, Brandon Tierney. Back to the discussion earlier about what New York is like for players, McKinnell. All we're saying is the volume is unlike any other place.
No question.
And I'm not here to tell you how Chicago media works because I have no idea how intense it is. I don't know all the personalities there. I don't know. It's just that it just doesn't stop coming, and it's almost like the outlets, unlike some other markets we know of, it's almost like the outlets back the media people, stirring the pot and developing rivalries and torturing the athletes. Like they will be behind them doing that. I don't think they tell them to do that, but they will have their back. So because of the competition, there's a motivation to really drive it home with certain athletes, and you just don't want to be on the bad side of, you know, dozens of media people. And this was the battle, and I don't want, you know, go crazy on this point over and over, but this Brandon Tierney said, hey, Nets win 7 straight, no one cares. Nets lose 7 straight, no one cares. Speaks volumes. So Kevin Durant responded to him and says, what does it say? Okay. Tierney responded, nothing but respect for your game, but the reality is simple. The Mecca, which is Madison Square Garden and the Knicks, had your name all over it, and you passed up the shot. I'm from Brooklyn. It's in my blood, but NYC is all about the Knicks and always will be. Adam, do you agree with that?
That it's always in his blood yet. No, but
No. About it's always going to be about the Knicks. Do the Nets have a chance to make a dent in New York?
They do, but, I mean, people are still going to care about the Knicks no matter what.
Right.
But they'll... If he wins and he's very successful, then sure, everybody's going to jump on board and care about the Nets. I think that's the difference, and I think that's kind of what people are getting at in that talk about the, you know, those two teams that way. It's that the Knicks will be relevant whether they're the worst team in the league or the best team in the league. People will care about it and be interested. The Nets have to be, you know, competing for a title to get that kind of attention, although Durant will have that kind of attention on him when he starts playing.
Look no further than the West Coast, Steve. Look at the Clippers and the Lakers. The Lakers and really have done a lot more winning than the Knicks have, obviously. And for the longest time, people thought that the Clippers were never going to be able to make an impact. And all that took was Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and a couple playoff runs to, again, it did not completely shift the landscape. But West Coast joke of the Clippers was essentially completely forgotten, and now they're somewhat of a powerhouse. I think on some level the same thing could happen in Brooklyn.
This is also a debate. If you had this debate in L.A., I'm not sure the Clippers have made much progress.
Look at attendance, look at the excitement.
Not attendance. Okay, excitement.
The Battle of Los Angeles, Christmas Day. We're talking about it all the time. There's excitement.
Because people care. Who's in the battle? The Lakers.
Exactly.
Right. The Lakers are the story.
Steve, I don't think anyone will take over the Knicks. I agree with you. It is the team of New York.
Right.
But I think that it's a city large enough, the coast is large enough, and these teams, well, specifically the Nets, are constructed well enough to where they're going to make a huge impact, and they will have their fans. And you know what? I remember going to the World Series in 2005. Chicago Cubs fans that I know wearing White Sox hats at the World Series because it was a Chicago team in the World Series. I promise you, if the Brooklyn Nets, please say this.
Please say that Knicks fans are going to root for the Nets.
They absolutely will.
Oh.
You think that that rivalry is somehow more important than the Cubs and White Sox? Are you serious? You think that rivalry is more than the Cubs and White Sox? I saw it with my own two eyes, Steve.
Yes.
Cubs fans rooting for the White Sox.
Then that says
the
a
Knicks
lot about Chicago.
The Knicks fans will absolutely root for
then
the Nets.
Then that says a lot about
Chicago.
Man,
that is sports fans in general.
Lakers fans ain't rooting for the Clippers.
Well, I didn't say Lakers fans. I said Knicks fans who haven't won anything in five decades.
There's also a huge
Knicks
difference.
Knicks fans will never root for the Nets. No.
That's a lie.
The huge difference is that the Nets aren't really looked at as a New York or a Brooklyn team. Like, they're
Holy
playing
crap.
There, but they're not seen as that. So that I think that's the difference in that particular situation. Because I'm with you that a lot of fans jump on bandwagons when they shouldn't.
To suggest there aren't sad-ass Knicks fans that have been watching losing for 40 years that one time when a Brooklyn team gets in the finals, they won't cheer for them is ridiculous.
I would say if it's more than 10%, I'd be pretty shocked.
You were lost.
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty shocked by that.
I'd say under 10%. I agree.
It's not a Brooklyn
team.
But there will be some throwing on some Nets jerseys. It's under 1%.
Oh, stop.
Just like Yankees fans would never root for the Mets.
They don't have to, Steve, because
fans,
they have the Yankees. The Knicks have nothing. They win nothing. They are one of
the
worst teams in sports,
Yankees.
Run by the worst owner
Giants
in sports.
Giants fans would never root for the Jets. Jets fans would never root for the Giants.
If they're bad enough, they will. The Cubs hadn't won in 100 years, so they cheered for the White Sox. The Knicks, if they don't watch it, they will not win in 100 years, and they'll cheer
Ryan,
for the Nets.
Stop using Chicago as an example.
Why would I not use that? You're telling me that Chicago fans, the Chicago Cubs fans, aren't some of the most dedicated, long-suffering, engaged, apparently not, just because a couple of their fans put on White Sox hats in 2005. I can't wait until the Nets win multiple championships and some of your friends jump ship and you'll be like, what happened? Yeah, sports happen. Sports fans are soft. I guarantee you it happens, Steve.
L.A. is apparently a better sports city than Chicago. Lakers fans will never root for the Clippers. And Clippers fans will not be, now that the Clippers are good, they will not be rooting ever for the Lakers.
Oh, there will be some.
Stop with the crossover stuff.
They shouldn't. There will be some, though.
So, really, the rub on this was the arrogance of Knicks fans, and it's also the lack of understanding. You're not getting players, not because people are afraid to play at Madison Square Garden, not because they're afraid to be on the big stage. Your owner is a creep. I don't understand in certain markets how people haven't picked up on the fact that once the rep gets out, these players are smart. They can make money anywhere. They can be a star anywhere, especially in the NBA. It's the same thing. No one wants to play for the Redskins. Why? Because Dan Snyder is a creep. When your owner is so bad, it gets to a point where players are like, no, we're not playing there. I don't care what city it's in, what the history is, or how, you know, ballyhooed the arena is. I don't care if you call it the Mecca. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
That's the story here.
Yeah, for sure.
So in all of this arguing, I have Durant's back. Our friend Brandon Tierney is wrong, but he's a Knicks fan, and he's speaking up on behalf of Knicks fans. And they can't see why players don't go there. They just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, and this argument's going to continue for a long time.
Clearly,
well, it's great for the NBA, and it actually is great. To Ryan's point, it is great for New York basketball. It's going to give the Nets an opportunity to make a mark and further develop some sort of rivalry. Just like it's happened with the Clippers. The Clippers have clearly made some headway, but you know, neither is going to take over the city. The traditional team is always going to rule the city, but it's good for the league and it's good for those cities.
And yeah. I do. I completely agree with you, Steve, about the Nets, or go back to the White Sox, whatever the reference I was making, right? Those second teams will never completely overtake, right, the traditional powerhouse of whatever city you want to use, whatever example we're using, Cubs, Lakers, Knicks, whatever the case may
Angels,
be, right?
Dodgers.
But there can be a 5-year window. There can be a 10-year window, and then you can build on that. You will absolutely see some of your friends, Steve, if this happens, if the Nets are as good as a lot of us think they will be, there will be people jumping ship because they want to win in their city.
Well, one correction, it won't be my friends. I wouldn't be a friend with someone like that.
Fair point, fair point.
And if they were my friend, they'd probably not be my friend because I would ride them so hard about it, about switching and being a pansy and a quitter, that they'd be out, which is probably, in the end, beneficial
that.
To
you
them,
think,
right?
You think BT will jump on board?
No. No. I watched – the deeper story here is when Tierney came out, he came out to Las Vegas in, like, I don't know, 99? And he actually needed a roommate, and the company reached out to me, and they're like, "You're a Jets fan. Do you have room to live with this Jets fan?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So we share some commonalities there. I'm not a Knicks fan, but he is, and I watched the guy melt down one time. I don't even think he was watching a Knicks game. He just went into some rant in our apartment about Patrick Ewing, and it was like one of the greatest rants I've ever seen off radio. The other classic one was the Jets lost a game on Monday night, and if I recall correctly, whatever game unit he had, he took it. He walked over to the balcony on the second floor of Swanky apartment and threw it out onto the ground. I think there was another argument over New York sports when one of his friends was in town. He took one of the handheld phones, right, and threw it across the room and missed his buddy's head by, like, 2 inches and broke the phone against the wall. So, trust me, he's Knicks through and through. He ain't switching. It doesn't matter how good the Nets are. I will say one thing that did bother me in his tweets, and I guess he's trying to play, you know, media Switzerland. He sort of, like, backed down a little bit and was, like, all this appreciative stuff with Kevin Durant. Like, dude, just cut it out.
He's a father now.
And I would also like to say, if there's anyone out there listening that wants to know how to get into radio or what you need to do, clearly just being a violent, insane person who yells a lot and throw things is a good pathway to success. Because I think we all have that in common.
Yes, I was going to say, all of us ripping on anyone for yelling would be the ultimate pot calling the kettle black. All right, let's get into the Niners playoff game this weekend. We'll talk to one of the experts from ESPN.com. And then we got Fezzik to close out the hour with a quick look at all of the games and where you should be placing your money.
Hit up Cofield and Company on Facebook, like ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
Cofield on the road in lovely Laramie, Wyoming, getting ready for a UNLV basketball game. The guys are down at our Friday spot, the Golden Nugget on Fremont, downtown Las Vegas. Ryan McKinnell and Adam Hill manning the station there, along with our good buddy Angel. I'm sure he just made a face there. Not my good buddy, right? All right, let's get into what's going on with the San Fran side in the Minnesota-San Francisco game. And Nick Wagner covers the Niners for ESPN.com and gives us on Cofield and Company a couple of minutes here on a busy Friday. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing well. How's it going?
Good, good. Let's judge the close of the Niners season from the defensive side of the ball. Did you see a fade? What do we see different in terms of numbers and points scored, points allowed?
Yeah, I actually wrote about this today on ESPN.com. There was a definitive drop-off after about the first 10 games through the final six games, and there was a couple of common threads that ran through that. First and foremost, it was a health issue, starting with losing safety Jaquaski Tartt, linebacker Quan Alexander, defensive end Dee Ford hasn't really been available much towards the end of the season. And then beyond those guys, there were some guys in terms of depth, defensive tackle DJ Jones, defensive end Ronald Blair, particularly those guys up front, Blair and Jones and Ford. Losing those guys really hammered into kind of their depth, and that they were able to at the beginning of the season play guys like Nick Bosa and DeForest Buckner were playing, you know, roughly 40 snaps a game. And then towards the end of the year, they were averaging something like 57 snaps a game, and I think a lot of that attrition kind of chipped away. They were still getting pressure, but they weren't getting home for sacks as much. The sack numbers dropped off, and so did the takeaways. And all of that is tied together. All of that is tied into the pass rush. A lot of the plays they were making in terms of interceptions and things at the beginning of the year really kind of stemmed from getting pressure on the quarterback. And so that's why some of those things really fell off. That's the biggest reason for it. They're hopeful now that they, you know, they were fortunate enough to get the bye week by about an inch there in that final week by beating Seattle. It gave them a bye week. They're going to get Tart back. They're going to get Alexander back, at least on a somewhat of a limited basis. And then Dee Ford also is likely to return tomorrow. So they're going to be a little bit closer to full health than they've been in quite a while, and their hope is that that's going to get them back to closer to the dominant defense they were early in the season.
Obviously, Alexander is a major part of that. How much do they think he can give them?
I think right now the plan for him is to kind of ease him back in a little bit, but I don't know how much they're going to be able to do that just because of the opponent. You know, the Vikings are a team that isn't necessarily going to throw three and four wide receivers out there, spread you out. You're going to be in your nickel and your sub packages a lot. And if that's the case, I think you could see Alexander on the field a little bit more than maybe you would expect otherwise, because they believe strongly in Dre Greenlaw, the rookie who actually replaced Alexander and is the one who made that tackle in Seattle to win that game a couple of weeks ago. I think he's going to still be prominently involved, and in an ideal world, they could sprinkle in Alexander maybe in some of those obvious passing situations, use him in coverage, and maybe limit how much contact he has to have in terms of coming up to defend the run. But with the Vikings, they're gonna put two tight ends out there. They're going to use a fullback. They're going to do different things. They're going to keep you in base defense a little bit more. So I'm interested to see if, even if they do that, if the Niners try not to play Alexander too much and maybe use Azeez Al-Shaair, who's been playing that Sam linebacker spot more as well. But I don't think they're going to use him as much as J.J. Watt, but heck, J.J. Watt wasn't expected to play as many snaps as he did last week, and he ended up just kind of cutting it loose mid-game when he realized how much they needed him.
Yeah, for sure. And great breakdown on the defense. We're going to get back into a little bit more about the game, but I'm just very thrown off because I was looking at your Twitter. What is the halftime show tomorrow?
Yeah, it's funny. So it's Tone Loaf, Young MC, and the Sugar Hill Gang, I believe, are performing. It's the first playoff game ever at Levi's Stadium for the 49ers. But with that lineup, you would think it was their first one back at Candlestick Park. So a little bit of a throwback there.
Well, first of all, how long is this halftime show?
Well, I'm sure it won't be too long, but I'm sure they'll play, you know, a couple of three hits that we all know that they could go to, a little Rapper's Delight, stuff like that, and keep it moving. But, you know, yeah, you don't get a lot of time to go out there and perform, even in the playoffs, until the Super Bowl. So
I'm actually more excited about this game now because hopefully we get some of this on TV. This is fantastic stuff. We will make sure we're tuned in for the halftime. I will say, I was covering the Raiders some this year. I got to meet Montel Jordan on the sideline at a Raiders game. That was interesting, but I think this is better.
Well, the Niners actually had Montel last year. He actually came and performed. And so, yeah, they're not hesitant to bring back some of the old school hip hop heads. Now, the real hip hop heads out here in the Bay Area want, you know, they want E-40. They want, you know, they want the Rapid Forte, guys like that to come out. But maybe if they keep advancing, they can keep doing that.
God, I would love an E-40 show at halftime. I might have to come up for that game if that happens.
I like the Rapid Forte reference.
Yeah, that'd be solid. We'll check that out. All right, well, we talked a little bit about the defense and getting Alexander back and what that means. It's a weird question because of how well they played, and I know a lot of people are excited about, you know, what Garoppolo did this year, but how is there any concern about Jimmy Garoppolo heading into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think it's just a question of the unknown, right? You don't know exactly what you're going to get because he hasn't performed on this stage yet, and I think that I think he's answered a lot of questions this year. He's checked a lot of boxes throughout the season. He's won a lot of big games in the regular season. You know, he played very well in that Seattle game, which was essentially a playoff game, given how much was on the line in terms of the division and playoff seeding and the bye and all that kind of stuff. And he went into New Orleans and he beat Drew Brees in a shootout in a game that he was very good at. He had a very good game against Green Bay. So teams that, you know, you could see in the postseason, he's done that. But it is a little different when the lights come on and you get into the postseason. You know, how are you going to perform in that situation? And against what I would consider probably the best defense that they've played this year in terms of being the most complete. And also, I think the Vikings present a challenge that really takes away some of the things that the Vikings do really well defensively, match up really well with things the Niners do offensively. And I say that particularly some of the things the Vikings do up the middle, where they have really good linebackers in Kendricks and Barr. You have two really good safeties in Harris and Smith. And those guys matched up against a guy like tight end George Kittle, fullback Kyle Juszczyk, the running backs, those types of things. And so I...
Uh-oh. Sounds like you lost him.
R.I.P. Nick.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was great. It's great answers.
I like your question about how long the halftime show was going to be.
Yeah.
it was Tone Loc. It was who else?
Young MC and Sugar Hill Gang.
Okay, how many songs does Young MC have?
Many, Steve.
Well, he actually does, but how many do people know? And the same thing with Tone Loc. You've gotten to see these shows before, right, with the old hip-hop heads?
Of course I have.
Yeah, they only let them play, like, two songs. Yeah.
Okay, if they all do two songs, we're already looking at, like, 30 minutes.
All right, one song.
Right, it's going to be one song each. And by the way, Rapper's Delight is, like, 12 minutes long.
That's true. It's an epic. It's their Iliad, their Odyssey.
They can't do the short version?
They're going to have to. I mean, I say make it like a two-hour halftime show and let's go. I don't think they're going to do it.
By the way, if we get Nick back on, I'm curious to... Oh, no.
Oh, it was
now us. Now we're getting word our phones just went out back at the Lotus Broadcasting Studios.
Festivus?
What do you guys think? Well, I know who Adam's not going to say, or Brian's not going to say. Who do you guys think the Niners fear the most on the Vikings offense?
Oh, Dalvin Cook.
It's Cook. Why would... because you're going to say Kirk Cousins, Steve?
Yeah.
Come on. Kirk Cousins is completely non-existent if Dalvin Cook isn't doing his job.
Wow.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, I'm in.
Let him, buddy. He gets all worked up. Go ahead. You think that Kirk Cousins is a non-factor, and you even said on Twitter when we were going back and forth at the end of last weekend, said even a Super Bowl is not going to change your mind.
That's not what I said. I said it might not.
It might not.
Would it be a Mark Rippon, Brad Johnson Super Bowl, or would he put the team on his back, and would he make something happen, and would he actually go out and win the Super Bowl? Time will tell. Do I believe in Kirk Cousins? Absolutely not. Is he a good quarterback? Yes, I do think he's a fairly good quarterback. Is he worth $28 million? Hell no. He has proven nothing that would lead me to suggest that he is worth $28 million. In fact, and again, I back it up with Cook. He's one of the best running backs in the league, and he was healthy this year. Look what happened. The Vikings were a little bit decent, right? Last year, when Dalvin Cook was not Dalvin Cook, what were the Vikings? They weren't even a playoff team. This team is 100% contingent on Dalvin Cook. So, vis-a-vis, San Francisco 49ers are going to be very concerned with stopping Dalvin Cook.
I'm actually really in on the theory RJ Bell talked about with us last week, but I don't know how it applies on the West Coast. So if those were listening, and I guess it wouldn't apply at all, right, because it's a 1:30 game, but if you were listening last week, RJ made the case, backed up by a lot of research that they did over at pregame, that Kirk Cousins does not struggle in prime time, in big games. He struggles if the kickoff time is not 1 p.m.
This is amazing.
And I think we saw it again last week. He was good. He's such a creature of habit, and he has talked about that in interviews. I went out and looked up some of those after RJ talked about this last week. He is such a creature of habit that he needs this day, his exact day, to play out as he wants it to, and everything is in the right routine. And when they don't kick off at 1 p.m., he really struggles.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Let's do a little test here, since you guys may screw it up, and right now I'm not even sure where I am. What time does this game start for Kirk Cousins?
1:35.
What time does this game start for Kirk Cousins?
Well, that's a good point. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it if he's on the West Coast, if it applies.
Right. So is it really a 3:35 start?
I feel like
is that too close to prime time?
No, I feel like it's where he is. Like, he wakes up at the same time, he eats breakfast at the same
time.
And
I'm sorry, if we're talking about a quarterback that can't get on a schedule on game day and the differences between afternoon or night games, and he can't compensate for that, then what are we talking about?
We're talking
about a mental midget, a weak person that can't leave his team.
I'm thinking mentally ill.
Yeah.
More than anything.
What we're also talking about is, with the task in front of us here of picking the games, that's what I care about.
Yeah.
It's not a late game. We're just talking about evidence out there that if he has to start in night spots,
right,
it's out of his comfort zone, and it screws him up. But by the way, By the way, when you guys start calling him a mental midget, could everyone on this show every day be good doing, say, a morning show? A radio morning show where the show starts at 6 or 7, you're up at 4.
I think it's changing your routine, but I think at the same time, what you're really saying is if we do the show at 3 every day, could you then say for one day tomorrow we're going to do the show at 6 a.m.?
No. Because our job would be, I think the test would be, I think it has to be more than one day. Could you do a week? Could you bounce back and forth? Actually, could you bounce to different times every week?
I don't think that's the right comparison. I think it's more if every game's at 1 o'clock and he's just in such a routine. It's 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Now it's 8. Now he's thrown off.
Yeah, I mean, I bounce around at all different times every week, but I'm terrible. So I'm Kirk Cousins.
I was going to say, I've listened and you definitely have your weak points.
Sure.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
It was a joke. But my original question about morning shows, I don't know that we'd all be good doing morning shows. I know you do one now. Ryan, do you think you're as good on your morning show as you are on, say, doing one at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like to assess myself, but I mean, I don't think they would hire me and put me in that position if I didn't bring the same energy and wasn't as quote-unquote good as I am in the afternoon or when I do fill in on the press box. I mean, a job is a job is a job. Do it.
Yeah, I don't think that's accurate. So.
Okay.
But you're a guy who, you know, you're very confident in yourself. So
I don't know
that I'm as good in the mornings as I am in the afternoon.
That's fair.
I'm pretty G-damn cranky at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting up at 4:30 tomorrow, and I'll be doing my show at 6 a.m., and I like to think that, I bring the same energy and do what I do. At the end of the day, it's a great job. I love doing it. I'm very fortunate to do it. And you say that I think highly of myself. If I thought highly of myself, I'd make a lot more money than I make. So, I don't think that's the case.
Other people thought highly of you?
No, I would stand up for myself, and I would ask for more money. But
So essentially, what we're looking at here is McKinnell is like Aaron Rodgers, and I'm basically Kirk Cousins.
Wow.
I'll admit it.
I'm fine with this.
I can self-assess.
I'm fine with all of these as long as I'm not Josh Allen.
You know, that's the funniest thing about your dislike of Josh Allen, isn't it? Ryan McKinnell and I have talked about that many times.
Yeah.
About how Adam Hill goes after a guy who's got a lot of similarities to Mr. Hill.
That I'm terrible like 99% of the time, and then once in a blue moon I'll do something great, and people will be like, wow, see, he is good. That's me?
You have certain skills like Josh Allen. Okay. I don't know what the equivalent of running is on radio, but we'll have to come up with a list.
I have a very punchable face like him.
You're a dual threat like him? I don't know what that means.
He's not. Can only run.
You guys are both winners. Uh-oh, don't even open that Pandora box.
Easy.
What?
McKinnell, Cousins is off limits on the show, and Josh Allen is off limits on Cofield and Company.
Fair.
For Adam Hill. But you know what? I strayed. That was a ridiculous conversation. All right, so what do we do with Kirk Cousins and what we think is a trend where he has a certain comfort zone that he's comfy in when it comes to start time? Do you feel safe? First of all, is it enough of a trend, one, and do you feel safe playing on him?
I think I'll have to do more research as far as, like, what it means on the West Coast. Like, if it's 1 o'clock where he is or 1 o'clock actual time. Well, I guess it wouldn't be 1 o'clock actual time because most of his games are at noon local time in Minnesota.
Mm. So this is too late.
It might be too late.
3:35 is basically prime time, so Kirk is going
to
flop.
But it might be close enough because it's 1:30 local time. It's just, like, an hour and a half late. I don't know how to interpret that. I do know that I think I'll be taking the Vikings. I think that they just have too much. I don't like how San Francisco play down the stretch. I know Quan Alexander's return is really massive.
No worry about Thielen.
For their defense. It was just a cut. I think it's fine.
Okay.
But Thielen, obviously, and you know, we talked about this, Steve, on the pregame show last week, where I thought Thielen was the most important player on their offense, and he had to do something for them to win, and he did. He had a massive game and was, you know, back to what we saw from Adam Thielen last year. He got the cut this week. He got cleated and, you know, had to get that, you know, stitched up. But if it's just a cut, that's usually not that bad. I think we could see a Curt Schilling type situation. I know Steve will love that. But we'll see.
Lots of prohibited names being thrown out.
Yeah. It's gonna be Adam Schilling is gonna he's gonna come out and get the bloody sock and try to lead them to another victory. But I do think they play them very close.
We'll get to McKinnell's take on San Fran and Minnesota, especially when you mix in the point spread. I'll give my take as well. We got three more football games to get to, and God willing, from my ears to the radio gods. We're going to get Warren Moon on in the 5 o'clock hour, but, you know, some things are beyond our control. Come on, phones, work!
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
All right, McKinnell. We want winner number one. We're going to pick all four games before the end of the show. Will, you don't like Kirk Cousins at all. You don't think he's a winner. You think he's a decent quarterback, but nope. He's not the guy who carries the team. Can he go in to San Fran and win the game outright or play a competitive game, have the Vikings inside of 7, Niners minus 7?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually like the Vikings here.
Can I change mine now?
Uh-oh.
I mentioned it earlier on my show this week.
You have a shot?
Shut up.
5 days a week, 9:20 the game, the Mac Attack.
2-3, 2-3, 2-3, 2-3, 2-3 on 9:20. Stream on OVSportsNetwork.com. Yes. No, I do. I think 7 points obviously is a lot to be given Minnesota, especially a run-heavy team. Now I understand it's Nick Bosa and it's this San Francisco defense, and they are in Santa Clara. I get it. But just 7 points, that's a lot. It, honestly, I'm not betting this game. I'm laying off the game. But if I was going to the window and betting this, there's no way I could take San Francisco. So, I mean, it has to be Minnesota here.
Adam, do you want to change your pick?
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, I won't. No, I haven't been sold on the Niners all year long. Now, it's fallen pretty nicely for them because they got home field by, like, less than an inch, which was very beneficial to them, as Nick was just talking about with us, getting that bye week, getting some players healthy. They were really, really faltering down the stretch. So that helped them. Now they're at home, and now they've got the Saints out. I think Minnesota and San Francisco may be right now the two best teams left in the NFC. So you get by this, you've got either a third matchup with Seattle or a matchup at home with Green Bay. You know, that is a beneficial spot to be in for the San Francisco 49ers. They just got to get through this, and I'm not sold on Garoppolo. I am sold on their running game, and we'll see what their defense can do getting healthy again. But I just think Minnesota can absolutely keep this game close.
I worry about some of these teams that didn't get the week of rest. Am I wrong? Is that a betting misconception?
No, it's the team that has a week of rest is in this round, it has been absolutely dominant the last decade. Just dominant. The teams that have a week off have been really, really good. And, I mean, that plays into being at home, to being the better team, all those things. But the rest has helped teams traditionally. And home teams' favorites do really well this round.
Well, that was one of the factors I'm considering. And I also, this is going to sound crazy because I was just sort of defending Kirk Cousins. I don't think he's going to have a good game. I don't think Dalvin Cook is 100%. And I do think the Niners defense will be better, and I think they have the better coach too. I think Mike Zimmer is a good coach, but a little shanty with an extra week to prep. So I'm going to lay the 7, San Fran. I think they handle the Vikings pretty easily in this one. All right, we're going to get to Tennessee, Baltimore. We'll get picks for the Chiefs and the Texans, and also the final game of the weekend, the Packers and the Seahawks. But on the way back at the Golden Nugget, Big 5 at 5. There's something about a body. There's some story that Adam Hill has to do what? Okay, 5 o'clock hours on the way.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.